नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 21 एंटाइटल्ड गोपीज ग्लोरीफाई कृष्णस फ्लूट टेक्स्ट नंबर 8। च्युत प्रवाल बरह स्तब स्तब को पलाब्ज च्युत प्रवाल बरह स्तपोत् स्तब कोत्पलाज मालानुप्रक्त परिधान विचित्र वेश मालानुप्रक्त परिधान विचित्र वेश मध्ये विरजतोर अलं पशुपाल गोष्ट्यां मध्ये विरजतोर अलं पशुपाल गोष्ट्यां रंगे यता नटवरो क्वच गायमानो रंगे यता नटवरो क्वच गायमानो च्युत प्रवाल भरस्तबकोत्पलाब्ज मालानुप्रक्त परिधान विचित्र वेश मध्ये विरजतुर अलं पशुपाल गोष्ट्यां रंगे यता नटवरो क्वच गायमानो च्युत प्रवाल बरहस्ततको प्रलाप्च प्रवेश नटव क्वच गायमानो मत जी च्युत प्रवाल भर बोक वहलाब्ज मालानुप्रता परिधान विचित्र वेश मध्ये व्रजत अलं पशुपाल घोष्ट्यां रंगे च्युत ऑफ अ मैंगो ट्री प्रवाल विद यंग स्प्राउट्स बरहा पीकॉक फेदर्स स्तबक बंचेस ऑफ फ्लावर्स उत्पाल लोटसेस Abja and lilies. Mala with garlands. Anuprakta touched. Paridhana their garments. Vichitra with great variety. Vesha being dressed. Madhye in the midst. Virajato, the two of them shone forth. Alam, magnificently. Pashupala, of the cowherd boys. Gostyam, within the assembly. Range, upon a stage. Yata, just as. Natavaro, two most excellent dancers. Kvacha, sometimes. Gayamano, themselves singing. Translation. Dressed in a charming variety of garments, upon which their garlands rested, and decorating themselves with peacock feathers, lotuses, lilies, newly grown mango sprouts, and clusters of flower buds, Krishna and Balram shine forth magnificently among the assembly of cowherd boys. They look just like the best of dancers, appearing on a dramatic stage, and sometimes they sing. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The gopis continue singing their ecstatic song as they remember the pastimes of Lord Krishna. The gopis wanted to go to the forest where Krishna was performing His pastimes, and while remaining concealed, peer through the leaves of the creepers and see the wonder of Krishna and Balaram dancing and singing with their boyfriends. This was their desire. But because they could not go, they sang the song in ecstatic love. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksharon Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanditamsha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So we are in the midst of Vrindavan. We are simultaneously in two places. One is at the house of the gopis, but the gopis are not in the forest. They are at their homes. But at the same times, their mind is in the forest of Vrindavan with Lord Krishna. So in one verse, we can simultaneously be in two places in the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is such a place where the experiences are manifold. So here, we are discussing this particular pastime where the gopis are imagining what is happening in the forest of Vrindavan. So,
The most striking thing that comes out from this particular verse, I'll read the verse again. Dressed in a charming variety of garments, upon which their garlands rest, and decorating themselves with peacock feathers, lotuses, lilies, newly grown mango sprouts, and clusters of flower buds, Krishna and Balaram shine forth magnificently among the assembly of cowherd boys. They look just like the best of dancers appearing on a dramatic stage, and sometimes they sing. The most amazing thing that I liked, which really comes out from this whole pastime, from this particular verse, is the fact that Krishna and Balaram, they are decorated with just something absolutely natural. Mango sprouts, lilies, lotuses, you know, peacock feathers. It doesn't talk about jewelry at all here. So it's quite amazing that the natural beauty of this world and the artificial beauty that, you know, the present modern world is trying to portray, you know. So, if you compare personalities, you know, who have been trying to beautify themselves in the past, like we find in the pastime of Krishna himself, there is a personality called Pondrak who comes. He used to call himself as Vasudeva Pondrak, and he was actually thinking that he is Krishna. It's amazing that Krishna was there. I somehow could never fathom how a person could actually, you know, try to imitate somebody else. You know, we have seen in our present context, there's one man who, you know, looks just like Mithun Chakravarti, you know, or somebody looks like Amitabh Bachchan, somebody looks like Sachin Tendulkar. But at least they don't claim themselves to be that, you know. I mean, the duplicate of Mithun Chakravarti doesn't say, I am Mithun Chakravarti. He says, I am a duplicate of Mithun Chakravarti. But here, Krishna's duplicate, at least he is considering himself to be Krishna's duplicate, he is saying, I am that. And he is saying Krishna is false. That's quite amazing. And if you study the attitude, so the whole aspect is of artificially trying to become beautiful like Krishna, cosmetically. In fact, Pondrak attached two hands to himself, you know. I was thinking what material he must have used to attach. Maybe plastic, or I don't know if plastic was there, but maybe thermocol, maybe some kind of wood. So artificial, so out of the, you know, natural beauty of the Lord. In fact, those who have 400 Vishnu forms in the spiritual world, in the Vaikuntha planets, practically every personality in the Vaikuntha planet has the 400 form, which Pondrak is hankering for. But even the people who have the 400 Vishnu form, they look less beautiful compared to the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of somebody who is trying to artificially attach two hands to make himself look like the Lord. And of course, he painted himself, you know, blackish blue. I mean, if you come to our drama and see, you know, children or adults also painted like Krishna, it doesn't really look beautiful, right? How much ever you try to make the color exactly the same, but it doesn't really look beautiful, because somewhere, you know, one patch goes away and you can see the skin, you know. So, there's another personality in the scriptures, Shurpanaka, who also was trying to look beautiful, you know. When Brahmaji was asking for benedictions from all these personalities, Ravan, Shurpanaka, Ravan's brother, Kumbhakarna. So Shurpanaka, the benediction that she asked for was that she wanted to have the strength or the ability to change form at will. So she was not satisfied with her beauty, definitely. So therefore she wanted to change form. So who is wanting to cosmetically change their looks? Somebody who is not satisfied with their looks, you know. So in this world, what God has given us, somehow or the other, people have a tendency not to be satisfied with it. They want something different. They want a different look. They want a different hairstyle. They want different. So Shurpanaka was one of those original, you know, stylists, you know. She tried to change her looks. And there is a description of how she comes in front of Ram. So Valmiki, so there are very few instances in the Valmiki Ramayana where there is humor portrayed. This is one of those instances, you know. So Shurpanaka's beauty, so-called her understanding of beauty, is considered to be humor according to Valmiki Muni. Interesting. So Shurpanaka, she was comparing herself with Ram, and Valmiki is comparing her with Ram. These are different mindsets or different understandings. Somehow, the most ugly person also, when he looks into the mirror, he finds something beautiful to look at. And he only focuses on that aspect of his beauty, you know. And somebody who sees from an overall perspective, you understand, it's not really beautiful at all. So Valmiki Muni, when he was looking at Shurpanakha, so he was comparing the beauty of Shurpanakha with the beauty of Ram, part by part. He said the hair of Shurpanakha, you know, coppery red, standing like, you know, lightning bolt, you know, and Lord Ram's hair, blackish, curly, soft like silk. The eyes of Shurpanakha were like sockets, you know, huge bulging eyes. They were like sockets of bulb, you know, you put a bulb into it. So Lord Ram's eyes, you know, thin and like a lotus flower. And the waist of Shurpanakha is compared to a barrel, you know, a big barrel. And Ram's waist is compared to very, very thin. You can measure it with this, with your whole hand, you know. And the voice of Shurpanakha, Valmiki compares it to when you when you scratch a nail on a tin sheet, what sound comes? The screeching sound, that is the sound of Shurpanakha's voice. And the voice of Ram is compared to sweet melody that comes out from a flute. So like that, there is comparison. But Shurpanakha, she is comparing herself with Sita. And she says, what kind of a lady is Ram married to? This is absolutely useless for her as a wife. Just see, look at her waist, so thin. The waist has to be something really big, you know. What is this? And look at her. If you see the whole body, it's only bones. Absolutely no skin, no fat, you know. So she's comparing her beauty with Sita's beauty, and somehow she finds every aspect of herself to be superior compared to Sita. This is illusion in the material world. So if you study from attitude of Pondrak and attitude of Shurpanakha, and the scene that is described here in Vrindavan, there is a big difference. There is a big difference. What is considered to be standard of beauty in the spiritual world is considered to be something useless in the material world. Leaves, you know, flowers and fruits and bulbs, you don't really give them any value in this, in the material world. In fact, you know, if you go to a vada farm, so many leaves and so many fruits are lying here and there, you know. You don't really give value to them because we don't know how to use them. Here is Krishna Balaram using the same things which are just lying down here and there, which all of us see, but that is helping them increase their beauty, and people are just going mad about it. The gopis are describing the madness that combination is creating. So, when somebody competes with Krishna, you become unnatural. And when one serves Krishna, one becomes very natural. So, in this world, real beauty is in serving Krishna. The beauty of this world, how much ever you try to compete with Krishna, to try to look as beautiful as Krishna, you will look unnatural and you will look artificial. That's what Pondrak did. That's what Shurpanakha did. That's what so many people in this world are trying to do. Imitate. But Krishna, his beauty, you cannot imitate. But if we want to really become beautiful, there is another way to do it. So it's not that beauty is not allowed. It's not that one cannot be beautiful. It's not that the scriptures say only Krishna can be beautiful, all others have to be ugly. It's not like that. There is a way to manifest our natural beauty. There is a way to manifest beauty in this world. And that beauty can be manifested by a spirit soul, by a living entity, by taking shelter of the process of seva, service. When one serves the Lord with humility, with devotion, with dedication, that service brings out the real beauty of a living entity. The real beauty which is not lying outside, the real beauty which is lying inside. From the spiritual perspective, Krishna is the same inside and outside. Absolutely, Satchidananda Vigraha. But we are in a material body, which is material and which is fleeting beauty. But we are the spirit soul, which is eternally beautiful. But to manifest the quality of the eternal beauty that we actually have, there is a process. That process is not cosmetic. That process is natural. And that process is a process of serving Krishna, which is the natural propensity of the living entity. The natural propensity of a living entity is to serve the Lord. And when somebody manifests that natural propensity, that aspect or that time is when the real beauty manifests. Like Srila Prabhupada, if you remember Jagat Tarini Mataji and Burijan Prabhu, when they had come and they were sharing this beautiful story of how Prabhupada saw beauty from different perspectives. He saw a photograph of Jagat Tarini Mataji, who was a very, very well-known actress at that point of time. She was actress in the Hollywood scenes. And there was a photograph of her as an actress, dressed very, very beautifully with all kinds of makeup and all kinds of beautification on a front page of a newspaper. And adjacent to that, there was another photo of the same personality in a clad in a sari, very simple dress. She's scrubbing pots in a temple. From Prabhupada's perspective, these are two images that have been captured of the same person. These are two images reflecting two aspects of beauty of the same person. One is the beauty that the world is glamorized about. One is the beauty that the world is trying to see, seek, trying to be. Another is the beauty that an acharya is trying to see, an acharya is trying to bring out, acharya is trying to point towards. So the beauty of this world, which the world wants you to portray, is not going to last. But the beauty of the world that the scriptures, that the acharyas, that the Supreme Lord wants us to portray, is going to last no matter whether the outside beauty lasts or not. Because this is the real beauty. So here, when the gopis of Vrindavan are discussing the beauty of the Lord, the process of discussing the beauty of the Lord, they are talking about how Krishna is so beautiful. And they are, the whole chapter is based on this one aspect of how description of the different aspects of beauty of Krishna, different qualities of Krishna. But what is the source of understanding these different qualities? Where does this discussion start from? This discussion starts from hearing Krishna's flute. So the gopis heard Krishna's flute and then they began to describe Krishna. So this is the process. Shravanam and then Kirtanam. When you hear something connected to Krishna, it is very easy to describe something connected to Krishna. So, you know, therefore the process of hearing is given such an importance. In fact, out of the 9 processes of devotional service, Shravanam is the first one, is the most basic one. And that is one that cannot stop in spite of, you know, one going to any stage of devotion. The gopis of Vrindavan, they were in the highest stage of devotion, the highest stage one could aspire for. You know, personalities like Narada Muni, personalities like Prahlad, personalities like Hanumanji, practically every great devotee of the Lord aspires to become a fraction of the dust of what the gopis are. And these are the people, what are they doing? They are hearing. So the process of hearing doesn't stop when you go higher. In fact, the intensity and the desire to hear increases as you go higher. But whatever little we hear, it benefits us. One time there was one man who would go to a satsang program regularly. But this man, as soon as he would enter the satsang program, as soon as he would sit, he would go to sleep. And, you know, the speaker, the sadhu who was speaking, he always took note that this man came. So whenever he would come, he would ask, "Aya kya?" So this man would hear only these few words of the speaker. You know, he would practically not hear anything else. So he would hear, "Aya kya?" You know. And then the speaker would ask, "Baita kya?" And then when he is going away, the speaker would ask, "Gaya kya?" So he heard only that much. And, you know, in his sleep, that's practically the only thing he remembered. So one day a thief came into his house. And, you know, unconsciously in his sleep he was remembering. You know? So he said, "Aya kya?" So the thief started shivering. So how did he come to know somebody is come? And then the thief went and hid inside the garden. And he said, "Baita kya?" So the thief really ran away. And he said, "Gaya kya?" So I am trying to emphasize the fact that hearing something, some Krishna katha, is going to benefit in some way. Maybe in a very remote way, but it will benefit. So therefore, we cannot undermine the process of hearing. So the whole concept of hearing starts from this particular chapter, the beautiful chapter that we are getting the fortune of reading and hearing, starts from the process of hearing Krishna's flute. And Shravanam, Kirtanam, and then there is Smaranam. So there are so many people who have challenges in practicing spiritual life because of so many circumstances. I know somebody who has a great longing, great desire to practice spiritual life, but the parents are just not allowing. This boy, he has to chant all his rounds outside the house. All his rounds. He cannot chant one round inside the house. In fact, if he puts a earphone and he's hearing a lecture, the parents come and pull out and hear what he's hearing. You know, if he's hearing some kata or kirtan, they throw out the MP3 player. You know, so this is the kind of opposition that he has. So he came and asked me, Prabhuji, what can I do in this situation? What can I do? I'm not able to practice at all happily. So I told him that Shravanam and Kirtanam may be difficult, but is Smaranam difficult? Because the parents may stop him from chanting. They may stop him from hearing. Can they stop him from remembering? So Smaranam is one process that no matter in what situation you are, no matter in what difficulty you are, no one in the world has the right to stop you from remembering Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan were exactly in the same situation. They were in households. They were in their own homes. And they had their mother-in-laws, they had their husbands, they had their children, they had so many duties to take care of. And they had a desperate desire to associate with Krishna. But their desperation to associate with Krishna was being stopped because there's so many impediments from the worldly point of view. But here you find that these are the same personalities, the highest devotees in the world, the highest devotees in this entire spiritual and material worlds, taking shelter of the process of Smaranam. And because they take taking shelter of this process of Smaranam, they find practically no separation from Krishna. They're practically connected with Krishna very, very deeply. So this kind of practice creates deep impressions in the heart. And these kind of impressions are the impressions that one never forgets. Because we are in the material world, material impressions have touched us a lot. I mean, as soon as somebody starts singing an old film song, immediately the whole, you know, you can probably sing the whole song, right? So these impressions are so strongly embedded in our lives. So these impressions have to be replaced by equally powerful spiritual impressions. So therefore, the gopis of Vrindavan, every time they see Krishna, it's like a photoprint into their minds. And they just hold that impression so deeply into their hearts that that impression is constantly being replayed every time they don't have physical association. So these kind of impressions, the Vrajavasis, if you study, you know, what is Vrindavan? Vrindavan is a replica of what we are experiencing in our lives. 11 years of association of Krishna and practically a century of separation from Krishna. So all of us in our lives also, when we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we have some experiences of Krishna. Anybody who has survived for a few years in Krishna consciousness, 100% has had some impressions, positive, powerful impressions of Krishna touching our lives. And those impressions are what is sustaining us in all the difficulties, in all the times of not having those impressions, right? I mean, we are always in this flux. Most of the times we don't have impressions of Krishna. Most of the time we don't have powerful experiences with Krishna through the process of Krishna consciousness. But those few times that we have, those few times sustain us in those times that we don't have. So here the gopis of Vrindavan, they are trying to use the process of Smaranam to recollect those impressions that have gone deep into their hearts. Those impressions that have that of Krishna that have really embedded into their hearts and trying to survive this ordeal of separation from Krishna. So when we get some powerful impressions and experiences and we live life based on remembering those experiences, if you study many of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, their life is based on those impressions. Their life is based on those impressions. Practically, you know, so many of Prabhupada's disciples who come and speak, when they speak those memories of Srila Prabhupada, these are impressions that have gone so deep into their hearts. You shake them and wake them in the middle of their sleep, they'll speak. Because those are the impressions that is helping them survive even now, during the most difficult times of their lives. So, when we have such impressions with connection with the spiritual master, connection with Krishna, connection with chanting the holy names, connection with the sadhus, those impressions help us survive the negative impressions of the material world which are constantly bombarding into our lives. So, if we allow material impressions to embed into our hearts, That is what will continue to remain our source of inspiration. But if you allow spiritual impressions to remain embedded in our hearts, then the material impressions will not get embedded. It will come, hit us and go away. So we should take shelter of this process of smaranam, just like the gopis of Vrindavan are doing here. So gopis are in Vrindavan and Krishna is in the forest. Apparently there is a great amount of separation. Apparently there is a huge distance of separating the two of them. But here, through the process of singing and remembering Krishna, they are finding connection with Krishna. So seeing Krishna through remembrance is actually, from our perspective, is trying to see Krishna in every aspect of our life. When we see Krishna in misery, and when we see Krishna in joy, then we are trying to remember Krishna in every aspect of our life. It is very easy to remember Krishna in misery, but very difficult to remember Krishna in happiness. Because misery, it brings you to understanding that you are not the controller. Happiness brings you to the understanding that maybe you are the controller. And because things are happening your way. So in fact, the gopis of Vrindavan, we study their lives, they always felt themselves in a situation of misery. Separation. And Krishna put them in that situation so that they can experience this kind of remembrance. So seeing Krishna in misery and seeing Krishna in happiness is actually a very intelligent way of trying to connect with Krishna. So the gopis of Vrindavan were not really trying to go to the forest. They couldn't go. In fact, if you study the discussion that they are having here, the gopis are, they are, Vrishna Chakrati Thakur actually analyzes the mind of the gopis. He says that the gopis, they wanted to, the gopis were aware that their mothers or other elder persons might hear their romantic words and disapprove. And thus they said, Akshanvatam Phalam, to see Krishna is the goal of all persons and not simply ourselves. So gopis were trying to convince themselves that we are doing this not for our own pleasure only. Everybody should be doing this. They're trying to justify that they want to go. But they never go. At least in this particular section, they are there at home. But the intensity of remembrance is so strong that they're practically there with Krishna, right? They're practically seeing Krishna. Some of the gopis, this particular scene which we are seeing, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is analyzing the mind of the gopis. What Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying, one of the gopis is saying that we can't go there. The other gopi is saying, no, we have to go there. And the other gopi is saying, we will not get caught seeing Krishna. What we will do is, we'll go hiding, lift a creeper and see Krishna from there. So this particular scene, which the gopis are seeing, is the imagination of one of the gopis lifting the creeper and seeing Krishna's beauty. So this is not something they're actually seeing. This is in their mind. This is in their hearts. So seeing Krishna in difficulties is what the gopis are doing. Seeing Krishna in happiness is what the gopis are doing. In every aspect of their life, the gopis are trying to see Krishna. Similarly, in our lives also, we need to develop this attitude of somehow there's a seeing Krishna in difficulties and in good times. One time, there was one man who went to a doctor. This doctor was, he was a very good doctor, not just because he treated patients well, but he also could connect to them very strongly. So many of the patients would go and open up their hearts to him. So one patient, he went to the doctor and said, can you show me a place where there is no difficulty at all? I want to go there. The doctor said, why do you want to go there? He said, this place is so miserable. Every step of my life I am finding difficulties. Please take me to a place where there is no difficulty. The doctor said, no problem. Come tomorrow early morning, I'll take you. So this man came with all hopes, wanting to go to a place where there is no difficulty. The doctor put him in his car and they drove. And they reached a place and the doctor got down. He said, please get down. And he said, this is the place where there is no difficulty. And he pointed out to a graveyard. This man was shocked. He said, what do you mean by that? The doctor said, the material world, this whole world is a place where there is going to be difficulty at every stage. Expecting no difficulty in this world is foolishness. The only place where there is no difficulty is after you die. When you reach the graveyard. And nowadays even that is difficult. To stay in the graveyard is difficult because there are so many people wanting the bodies also. So, finding Krishna in the practical aspects of our life and in situations of our life is what the gopis are trying to teach us here. So when we try to find Krishna like this, we'll be happy. And we try to find Krishna in, you know, we try to artificially find some other source of finding satisfaction, it'll never give us happiness. There was one boy, very innocently, you know, he was praying to God, "My dear Lord, please give me 50 rupees. And, you know, his prayer didn't get answered. So he got, you know, he said, "Let me try writing a letter." So he wrote a letter to God, you know, "My dear Lord, please give me 50 rupees. And he posted it in the post box. So the postman, he saw it, and he was shocked actually, you know, somebody writing a letter to God. So just as a practical joke, he sent the letter to Raj Bhavan, you know, president's office. So the president saw the letter, and he said, "Let us reciprocate to this boy." And instead of sending 50 rupees, he sent 20 rupees. And this boy received it, and he wrote a letter back, thanking God. "My dear Lord, thank you for sending me 20 rupees, but I noticed that you sent it through the Raj Bhavan. And these rascals, they deducted 30 rupees as tax." So this boy, apparently, innocently, he was trying to connect with God through whatever situations of life, you know. And similarly, in our lives also, this kind of innocence to connect to God through difficulties and through good times is very important. So the gopis of Vrindavan here at this point of time, it seems to be really from an external aspect, you know, imagining somebody who's in the forest, imagining this kind of scene, imagining this kind of beauty of Krishna, seems to be really weird, really artificial. But it's not. Because whom they're imagining, the personality they're imagining is not any ordinary personality. It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who has the ability to reciprocate with you from wherever he is and wherever you are. So, hearing Krishna's flute, the gopis, when they heard Krishna's flute, you'll find verses, in the previous verse, you'll find that when the young ladies in Vrindavan, in the Vraj, heard the sound of Krishna's flute, which captivates the mind of all living entities, they all embraced one another and began to describe it. So this concept of, you know, hearing Krishna's flute is not a very selfish concept. It is a concept that actually brings unity. It brings connection to each other. So here, we find that the, you know, in one sense, if you study from an external mundane point of view, the gopis, all of them were loving Krishna, were lovers of Krishna, right? And two lovers in this world, when they love a same person, love triangles always result in disaster. Here is not a love triangle. Here are hundreds of gopis loving one person, and still it's not creating a disaster, but it's creating unity. They're embracing each other. They're loving each other. What kind of love is this? The only kind of love that can relate, that can create unity in competitive people is Krishna, when there is love with Krishna. Because he is the only person who can reciprocate with everyone's love individually, where people don't feel threatened, people don't feel left out, people don't feel disconnected, people don't feel, you know, that I'm not wanted. So in this world, the fact is, yes, like somebody was just talking to me a few days back, and they had a miserable time in their office, some kind of difficulties that they were going through. And after the whole difficulty, they came to a conclusion. They said, the only person that I can love actually in this world is Krishna. Why they concluded like that? Because it, all the other love failed, right? So it's a fact that in this material world, trying to aspire for good love, true genuine love, is actually a hallucination. It's vague. But if you keep Krishna in the center, then there can be true love between two people. So here, the gopis of Vrindavan, they were competitors, you know, but they were loving each other. So, the difference between mundane love and transcendental love is that it is mundane love, it seems to be very sweet in the beginning, but it becomes poisonous later. But the spiritual love, it seems to be competition in the beginning, but it turns so sweet, it turns so, you know, amazingly connective. So, this reminds me of a very interesting story that I read many, many years back. Of one man who, you know, there was one lady actually, she got married and she just loved her husband so much, but she couldn't handle her mother-in-law, you know. This is a common phenomenon across the world, you know. And she just couldn't relate to her mother-in-law at all. And she was really wild because her mother-in-law was just not reciprocating. So she just gave up. So she went to a doctor and she told the doctor that, you know, I'm going through all these kind of depressions because the mother-in-law is just not, you know, listening to what I'm saying, and I just don't want to live. So the doctor said, I'll give you a solution. So this lady, she wanted to know what the solution is. So the doctor said, I'll give you a slow poison. You keep feeding the mother-in-law this slow poison and, you know, she'll die slowly. And people will not know that you're the cause of it. So she became happy. She said, you're sure it'll work? He said, 100% it'll work. Every day you should give one glass of milk, you know, and mix this poison and give it to her. But the only condition on which it'll work is that you have to be nice to her. Otherwise she'll think that something is wrong, you know. So you have to be really extra nice to her and then it'll work. So the lady kept giving every day this slow poison. And slowly over a period of time, she realized that her connection with the mother-in-law was becoming better and better and better. And one day the mother-in-law fell sick, like really very, very sick. So she started panicking and she somehow told her husband, you know. And then the husband started chastising her like anything, how can you think like this? And then she said, I'm repenting now. I love my mother-in-law, I don't want her to die. So let's go back to the doctor. They went to the doctor and asked him, you know, what do you do? I mean, is there any solution? He said, don't worry, I didn't give any poison. It was only some sugar pills, you know. And then the wife was surprised. She said, how did you cheat me? He said, the only antidote for poisonous relationships is investment of love. So, what we learned from this story is important. You know, the story is not important. What we learned from this story is that in this material world, relationships, fights, are poisonous in the beginning. They, you know, so this poison, what this lady was feeding to the mother, resulted in death, surely. But it didn't result in the death of the mother-in-law, it resulted in the death of the ego. So when there is false ego in a human being, it's very difficult to love naturally. So when we take the poison, what is the poison that we take? The Hare Krishna Mahamantra is considered to be like a poison. Because it's poisonous in the beginning, because it's very difficult for a conditioned soul to take this bitter medicine. That's why, you know, in the scriptures we find the holy name as a bitter medicine. But when we take this bitter medicine, the poison, the ego that is there in the heart, it dies. And when the ego in the heart dies, then what happens is that two individuals, when they love Krishna without a ego, without a false ego in between, then they can connect with each other also better. But when two egos love another person with false ego in between, then the false egos clash. So here in the spiritual world, the gopis, they're embracing each other because they love Krishna. Because they don't have any false ego, they don't have a false ego that Krishna is mine because I am great. They have a true ego that we are eternal servants of Krishna. So when there is no false ego and there is only true ego, when the ego dies, then there is solid bonding that happens, right? So the flute, you know, which Krishna was blowing, apparently it is a dull, mundane thing. Externally, a very, very dull object. Useless object. But Krishna's blowing of, you know, the air from his lips, it made the flute alive. In fact, the flute became so much alive that it could create madness in the world. So Krishna, he took an insignificant flute, a dry piece of wood which had holes in it, and empowered it with his melodious voice, and it creates madness in the world. In fact, it is affecting the purest devotees. What does it mean? It means that Krishna can make the most useless person pure, and he can create revolution through the most useless person in the world also. That's what Krishna is trying to prove by blowing on an insignificant flute. It's creating madness in the world. So in this world, Kali Yuga is considered to be an age where everyone is useless. Kali is an age where practically all duffers, all useless people, all dummies. Therefore, you have all these books, na? You know, learn English for dummies, and C language for dummies. Because the fact is that everybody in this world is dummy. But just try to see, understand what Krishna is trying to do among people who are dummies. He's trying to create a revolution. That's what Kali Yuga is. Towards the end of the Mahabharata war, one time, so Bhima had this portfolio of hearing people's difficulties, you know. So whenever somebody had issues, somebody had complaints, they would come to Bhima. Bhima would hear their complaints and he would go and solve it. He always wanted a fight, he always wanted to do something Herculean, you know, so he was given this portfolio. Engagement according to propensity. So one man, he came to Bhima and he said that, I have a problem. He said, my fence, you know, in my property, my fence is moving to another person's property. So Bhima said, I have never heard a fence moving. He said, such problem I can't solve. You go to Yudhishthira Maharaj. If there is some demon, come to me. And then same day, another person came to him and he said that, you know, today I had many small pots of water and I filled them into a big pot. And from the big pot, when I put the water back into small pots, the water was only half full. Bhima said, not my cup of tea. You go and ask Yudhishthira Maharaj. Another man came to Bhima and he said that, I passed an elephant through the eye of a needle. The elephant passed away, it went through, but the tail got stuck. Bhima said, today is a bad day for me, better I go, you know. And then fourth person came to Bhima and he said that there was a big rock in the middle of the road and big Herculean wrestlers came and tried to push it. The rock is not moving. But one sadhu came, one sannyasi came and he waved a stick and the rock moved away. Bhima said, this is too much for me. He went to Yudhishthira Maharaj himself and he said, explain what all this means. Yudhishthira Maharaj gave a very simple explanation. He said, this means Kali Yuga has started. So Bhima said, how did you conclude like that? Yudhishthira Maharaj said that the first story of fence moving to other property. Kali Yuga means everybody is eyeing on what others have. They want what others have. Not satisfied what they have, you know. It's a fact that even while eating prasad, you're looking at what other person's plate, you know, is more quality or different type of varieties in other person's plate, not satisfied with what is in your plate. So Kali Yuga means not satisfied with what you have and eyeing on others' property. And second symptom of Kali Yuga, he said, was that when you fill half, you know, when you fill water in a big pot to a small pot back, only half the water gets filled, which means that when you love somebody, when you connect with somebody, you only get half the reciprocation back. Don't expect full reciprocation. Doesn't happen in Kali Yuga. A very practical lesson. So when you love others, don't expect full reciprocation back. It can only happen with Krishna. And the third thing, he said, the elephant, you know, passed and the tail got stuck. He said, people are ready to spend unlimited on their own self, on decorating themselves, on feeding themselves, and on staying in big palaces. But when it comes to giving Krishna, or giving something charitable, nothing comes out. So elephant passed away, tail got stuck. And the fourth thing is that the big boulder, huge Herculean people are not able to move, but a saint comes and swings his, you know, thing and moves away the whole rock. The big boulder represents the sins of this world. The sins in Kali Yuga are unlimitedly huge like a boulder. All the big powerful processes of the past ages, nothing works. Do big yagyas, do big deity worship, do anything elaborate, nothing works in Kali Yuga. But a sannyasi coming and waving his stick and then moving, it represents Kale Dosh Nidhiya Rajan Eka Hasti Mahan Guna Kirtanadeya Sangasya Mukta Sangha Param Vrajet. The only thing that works is the holy name. It seems to be such a simple thing, but that simple thing can take away the big boulders of life. So in Kali Yuga, you know, we are in a position where we are useless, dummies, duffers. But these dummies and duffers of Kali Yuga, when they take shelter of Krishna's holy name, they get the same power and the same strength to drive away the biggest sins, which is very, very surprising. So basically, here, when the gopis are trying to, one of the gopis is trying to tell the other gopi that, we can't be following the protocols of this world. Let us just forget the protocols of this world, because worshipping Krishna is everybody's duty. What they're trying to tell us is that all inhibitions, all protocols, all kinds of selfish desires should be thrown away, kept aside, and exclusively take shelter of Krishna. So which means, we have to give up the shyness in this world to take shelter of Krishna. The gopis of Vrindavan, they're giving up the shyness to run towards the forest to see Krishna. What does the shyness indicate from our perspective? The shyness indicates feeling ashamed of the practice. There are so many people who, when you practice spiritual life, many people feel ashamed. you know, they find fancy ways of trying to justify that they are a devotee, you know. So when we give up this lower tendencies and shyness, we can take shelter of Krishna exclusively. But how is it possible? So gopis are saying, and one of the gopis, she is discussing, how can we give up the shyness? Another gopi is saying, we can easily give up the shyness when Krishna casts sidelong glances on us. Which means that when Krishna reciprocates with us by giving his mercy, then we can give up the shyness of this, you know, apparent protocols of this world and take exclusive shelter of Krishna. Of course, the mercy of Krishna can come in any form. It doesn't mean it has to come in the form we want, right? Like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, during his last stages of his life, he would always speak this. He said the mercy of Krishna can come from the front, can come from the sides, it can come from the back. When you accept the mercy of Krishna from the front, that's an ordinary devotee. But when you accept the mercy of Krishna that comes from the back, what is the meaning of mercy of Krishna coming from the back? It means through difficulties, through challenges, through tough times. Then you have transcended. You've gone to another level of devotion, which is more difficult to practice. So, the mercy of Krishna, the sidelong glances of Krishna, help us forget the small conditionings of this world. And the beauty of Krishna helps us forget the heat of this world. The gopis, going towards Krishna, there was heat in their homes. There's going to be angry situations, there's going to be, people unhappy. So in this world, when you try to connect to Krishna, there are going to be people behind who are going to be angry on you. There are going to be situations behind where there will be challenges and difficulties. But the beauty of Krishna is a remedy for such difficulties that come into our lives. In fact, if you study the sequence on which these chapters are coming, first came Kaliya, and Kaliya created heat in Vrindavan, unlimited heat. And when the poison of Kaliya's, fangs was settled down, then came the forest fire, which again created a huge heat. And then after the forest fire came the rainy season. And then after the rainy season, the beauty of Krishna is coming. Which means that in this world, for one to experience the beauty of Krishna, the heat has to be first experienced. So when somebody is miserable in the heat of the material world, such a person will love the beauty of Krishna. So therefore, the sequence of these chapters is there. So when you experience struggle outside, then one can experience shelter inside. And there was a very interesting quote which made a lot of sense in this connection. This quote said, patience, what is patience? Four definitions of patience. Yet patience with family is love. Patience with others is respect. Patience with oneself is confidence. And patience with God is faith. So when we have faith that Krishna will reciprocate, then it's very easy to tolerate the heat of this world, And the most amazing thing in this whole pastime is this last word in this verse, Gaya Manav. Gaya Manav means themselves singing. Krishna and Balaram were themselves singing. The most amazing thing in this world, the most amazing thing in this whole section, what I found, which really stands out, right, is that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary in Sarat Darshini, he says, what are Krishna Balaram singing? All the Vrajavasis, all the gopis, all the gopas, they are singing about Krishna. What is Krishna Balaram singing? Krishna Balaram are singing the praises of those who are praising them. Krishna and Balaram are singing the praises of the Vrajavasis. They are singing songs about the glorification of the Vrajavasis, of the gopis, of the gopas. That's what Krishna and Balaram are singing. So which means bhakti is an amazing process. It's not a one-sided process. It's not that we are only singing Krishna's glories. Krishna also is struggling to sing the glories of every devotee who is struggling to serve him. Right? That is the amazing reciprocation in bhakti. In all other processes, there is one-sided, endeavor. But in bhakti, the endeavor is two-sided. Just imagine Krishna is trying to put his intelligence and energy in trying to sing the praise of his devotees. And how many devotees he has? At least Krishna is one. The devotees are unlimited. So you can imagine what kind of intelligence and endeavor Krishna is trying to put in trying to praise all the devotees of the Lord. So therefore, this philosophy, it makes so much sense. Because the reciprocation is full on. You get absolute reciprocation. And that's what makes the process of bhakti stand out. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's already late. I'm sorry I went over time. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.